pull up a chair. I want to tell you about an airplane that everybody said would kill you, flown by a crew that named her after a dog, that went out and did the impossible more than 200 times and came home every single one of them. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger and you're listening to The Hangar. And today we're going to talk about a bomber sitting in pieces in a restoration shop outside Washington, D.C., right now, this year, and the men who put their lives inside her aluminum skin 80 years ago. Her name is Flakbait. Now, before I get too far down the taxiway, let me tell you today's show is brought to you by the good folks at AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight, your first solo, your private ticket, instrument rating, commercial, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it, and every one of them tells a story. That's what we're about here. Stories you can hold in your hand, check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's get into it. To understand Flakbait, you've got to understand the airplane. She was the Martin B-26 Marauder, and I need you to picture the late 1930s, because that's where this starts. The Army put out a call for a fast medium bomber, and a young engineer at the Glenn L. Martin Company named Peyton Magruder gave them exactly what they asked for. Maybe a little too exactly. He drew up an airplane with a fat, cigar-shaped fuselage and a pair of the biggest engines he could bolt on, those Pratt and Whitney double wasps, 18 cylinders apiece, screaming out 2,000 horsepower each, and to go fast, he gave her a tiny wing. A beautiful, efficient, absolutely tiny wing. Now here's where it gets interesting. A little wing is wonderful when you're going fast, it is not so wonderful when you're going slow, and there's one part of every flight where you are, by definition, going slow, landing.
The B-26 came into an airfield hot, she had to. Drop below about 140 on final, and she'd quit flying and fall out from under you. For a generation of young men who'd learned to fly on Cubs and Stermans floating onto the grass at 40 knots. This was a different animal entirely. She did not forgive you. She did not wait for you to catch up, and they died learning her. There was a training base down at MacDill Field in Tampa, and the losses in those early days got so bad that the men coined a phrase that followed the airplane the rest of her life, one a day in Tampa Bay. They said you could navigate to the field by the trail of marauders on the bottom of the bay. They called her the Widowmaker, the Baltimore Whore, because that little wing meant she had, and I'm quoting the pilots here, no visible means of support, the Martin murderer. Congress got involved. There was serious talk of canceling the whole program and shutting the line down. And this is the part I love. They didn't cancel her. Instead, they sent in a man to prove she could be flown, and the man they sent was Jimmy Doolittle. Yes, that Doolittle. He went up in a B-26 and he flew it on one engine. He feathered a prop, shut a whole engine down and did rolls. Made his point in about the loudest way a man can make one, the airplane wasn't the problem. The training was the problem. Teach a pilot to respect the numbers, keep your speed up, fly her by the book, and she would take care of you. They lengthened the wing a little on later models. They raised the tail, and more than anything, they taught men how to fly her properly, and once that happened, something remarkable occurred. The Widowmaker turned into the safest medium bomber of the war. By the end of the fighting in Europe, the B-26 had the lowest combat loss rate of any American bomber flying, the lowest. That airplane everybody wanted to scrap came home more often than anything else in the sky. Let that sit with you for a second, because there's a lesson in there about airplanes and reputations that still holds up today.
Now, into all of that comes one particular marauder. She rolled out of the Martin plant in Middle River, Maryland, in the spring of 1943. Serial number, and I'll spell it out. 41-31773. Just a machine, one of more than 5,000. She got assigned to the 449th Bomb Squadron, part of the 322nd Bomb Group, and she went to England to join the 9th Air Force. And when she got there, some crewman, and the story goes it was a fellow thinking about his dog back home, a dog named after the fly paper you'd hang to catch flies, Flakbait. He painted that name on her nose, Flakbait. It was half a joke and half a dare thrown right in the face of the German gunners. The Germans took the dare, pull up close now, because I want you to feel what these missions were. A B-26 crew was 7 men, pilot, co-pilot, bombardier up in the nose behind all that glass, a navigator, a radio man, and gunners. They flew at medium altitude 10, 12,000 feet, not way up high where the heavy bombers lived, down where the flak was thick enough to walk on, imagine the cold first. No pressurization, no real heat to speak of. The smell of it, hot oil, hydraulic fluid, the sharp bite of gunpowder, and underneath all of it the raw gasoline reek of 100 and some gallons an hour going through those two double wasps. The noise was a physical thing. Those engines didn't hum, they pounded right through the aluminum, right through your flight suit, right into your chest until you felt it more than heard it. And then you'd cross into occupied France and the flak would come up. If you've never had it described to you, anti-aircraft fire didn't look like the movies.
From inside, it was black flowers blooming in the air all around you, silent at first over the engines, and then you'd fly through the ones that were close and the whole airplane would ring like somebody hit it with a sledgehammer. Steel splinters, jagged chunks the size of your thumb, coming up through the floor, through the wings, whistling through the cockpit. Flakbait flew into that, and she flew into it again, and again.
207 times. 207 completed combat missions. More than any other American aircraft in the Second World War. Nobody else came close. Now here's where it gets interesting, and here's where the name turns from a joke into something almost holy. Flakbait was hit. She was hit over and over and over. By the end, her crews counted more than 1,000 holes in her skin. 1,000. She came home with her hydraulics shot out. She came home with the electrical system dead. She came home on one engine more than once, that little wing hanging on, the good double wasp dragging her, and 7 scared young men back across the channel. She had her tail nearly blown off. She had a propeller shot up on one mission. A piece of flak came through and cut a fuel line, and by all rights, that airplane should have burned in the sky, and she didn't. She just kept coming home. And think about what that meant to the men. In a war where your odds of finishing a tour were a coin flip, and worse, there were crews who wanted flakbait. They believed in her. She'd been through everything, and she always brought her people back. And in a business that dangerous, a man will take his luck wherever he can find it. She flew on D-Day. She flew in support of the Battle of the Bulge. She was over Germany itself at the very end. From the beaches of Normandy to the last week of the war, that one airplane was there for all of it. When it was over, somebody had the sense to realize what they were looking at. This wasn't just a worn-out bomber to be melted down into pots and pans like nearly all of her sisters were. Most of those 5,000 Marauders went straight to the smelter after the war. Today, of all the B-26s that Martin built, only a handful of complete airframes survive anywhere on Earth, and Flakbait, the most battle-scarred, most decorated, hardest-working of all of them, they saved her. They pulled her nose section off and shipped her home, and for a long time, decades really, that famous nose, still wearing her mission tally, still wearing the flak patches, sat on display while the rest of her stayed crated up in storage. A legend in pieces.
And that brings us to right now, because the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum made a decision. They were going to bring Flakbait back. Not restore her to fly, and not paint over her wounds. That's the part I want you old restoration hands to hear, because it's different from what we usually do out on the warbird circuit. When we restore a P-51 or a Corsair, we're chasing perfect, fresh paint, mirror aluminum, better than the day she left the factory. And there's a place for that. Lord knows I love a shiny warbird, but the conservators at the museum's facility out at the Udvar-Hazy Center in Virginia, they took the other road. They're not making Flakbait pretty. They are preserving her exactly as she was. Every one of those 1,000-plus patches over the flak holes, they're keeping the repairs the ground crews made in the field with whatever they had at 2 in the morning. So she could fly again at dawn, those stay, the grime, the wear, the story written in her metal. This is conservation, not restoration. And it is painstaking work. We're talking about people spending hours, days on a single panel, cleaning 80 years of corrosion one careful pass at a time, stabilizing original paint so it doesn't flake away, documenting every rivet, every scar, every hand-lettered mark, because each one is a piece of history you cannot ever get back once it's gone. They are treating that airplane like the Sistine Chapel, and she deserves it. Because here's the thing. A shiny restoration tells you what an airplane looked like. Flakbait, kept just as she came home, tells you what the war actually did to her and to the men inside her. You stand in front of that nose, and you can put your eye right up to a patch and know that on some freezing morning over France, a chunk of German steel came through right there, close enough to the pilot to make his heart stop, and he flew home anyway. That's not a museum piece, that's a witness.
And that's why we save these machines. Not because they're beautiful, though. A lot of them are. We saved them because they carried people, real people. Scared, brave, cold, young people who climbed into a little winged bomber everybody said would kill them and pointed it at the worst air on Earth, 207 times, and kept faith with each other. The old girl is coming back together now out there in Virginia, panel by panel, and one of these days you'll be able to walk up and stand with her whole again. When you do, don't look for the shine, look for the patches. Every one of them is a day somebody came home. My thanks today to the National Air and Space Museum, whose conservators are doing that quiet, careful work, and to the record left behind by the Martin Company and the men of the 322nd Bomb Group who flew her. If a story like this stays with you the way it stays with me, you can always find us over at RadioHangar.com.
This is Taildragger. Keep the faith and keep them flying.